Mr. Johnson, the Kentucky Human Rights Commission has passed 7 resolutions addressing our Kentucky and U.S. lawmakers. I'd appreciate your reviewing these for me, especially the action steps the commission recommends.
Thank you for having us. I'd be pleased to discuss those resolutions with you.
Let's start out from the top with the commission's resolution supporting efforts to increase voter participation in Kentucky. Tell me about that.
Well, maybe I should start off by saying that the commission adopted these at our meeting last week that coincided with the birthday of Martin King. You know, in most every community in the state or around the nation, people do celebrations acknowledging the work of Martin King, and we think that's good, and more of that needs to be done. But we felt like it was very important that we not only just talk about a day of service and being kind to each other, but we look at issues that Martin King would be addressing if he came to Kentucky today. The resolutions we adopted are part of an agenda that we think deal with broadening equal opportunity in the state of Kentucky and the type of thing that Martin King would be addressing if he were here today. And so when you asked about the one on voting, we are concerned that basically, we make it as easy as possible for every citizen, whatever their race or color or age or disability might be, to fully participate in the democratic process. We ought not to try to be making voting more difficult, and so we ought to do everything we can to encourage people to vote and to participate in the voting process and to make it as easy as possible. And so we listed several things that we thought would be worthy of consideration, some of which other states have adopted, and that's what that resolution talked about. It included same-day registration. It included things like early voting, same-day registration, absentee balloting, and that sort of thing.
Voting by mail.
Yeah, it seems to me that if you really want people to have access to the polls, you make it as convenient as possible. You don't make it as difficult as possible. And when we talk about voting during the work hours, during the work day, it's not convenient for many people who, and it disproportionately, in all honesty, impacts low-income people who can't necessarily take off.
The next resolution supports the raising of the high school dropout age to 18 in Kentucky.
Yes, a part of our concern there, and the governor has supported such legislation, and we join with him in supporting that. We need to do all we can to improve quality education in our state and to encourage all of our young people to stay in school. We've got to address issues that relate to the achievement gap between minority and majority students. Here in Kentucky, 66.2% of black high school graduates are not ready in one or more subjects, and that's the largest racial group in the state. So if we talk about how minorities fare in education, 66.2% are not ready for college in one or more subjects. We ought to be concerned with that in our communities. We ought to make sure the children stay in school and they're encouraged to stay in school. When we look at the dropout rate, we look at something like 2.6% of white students drop out of school every year in this state, which is too many, but 4.91% of African-American students drop out of school in Kentucky, and that just ought not be acceptable, and we ought to do everything we can through our community groups, our churches, our civic clubs, and what have you, our elected officials, to promote and to encourage children to stay in school. The truth is, without a high school education, the likelihood for success is very limited in this society. I would add another note as we look at education. I was looking at some figures about the black teacher gap in this state. In 1953-54 school year, which was roughly 59 years ago, 6.8% of our state's teachers were African American. Today, the percentage has dropped to 3.7. So you have to wonder, are we going in the right direction or the wrong direction in terms of trying to recruit more African American teachers and administrators in our school systems, not just to be role models for black students, but role models for all students. But those are just some examples.
Now, the next resolution reaffirms support of amending the Kentucky Civil Rights Act to include sexual orientation and gender identity as protected classes. I thought they were already there.
Well, there are only three cities, actually four now when you add VACO, Kentucky, the city of Lexington, Louisville, Covington, and a little town in eastern Kentucky named VACO adopted an ordinance just last month, discrimination based on sexual orientation within their cities. The Kentucky state civil rights law does not include, it does include sex discrimination, but it does not include sexual orientation. Many of the federal agencies, the Department of Housing and Urban Development and the Department of EEOC has now agreed to include sexual orientation as a part of their sex discrimination coverages, which makes sense to me. But the Kentucky State Legislature, who we function under laws adopted by the Kentucky State Legislature, and they have not added sexual orientation to the protected classes in this state. And we just think that we need to continue to say that discrimination against anybody is wrong, whether it's based on race, sex, religion, national origin, all of those disability, all of those are covered, but sexual orientation is not. And so in the state of Kentucky, if you are discriminated against because you are gay and you choose to rent a house and the landlord turns you down, there's really no statewide coverage. Or if the employer fails to hire you and because of your sexual orientation, there is no statewide coverage. In the cities I mentioned earlier, there is coverage. And so we just think that our General Assembly needs to look closely at this issue and needs to add sexual orientation to the protected classes that are covered in Kentucky. There's no real additional financial burden that we undertake by adding that coverage. But whatever the next person's sexual orientation is none of my business. But they ought not be discriminated against just because they choose a lifestyle different to what I may choose.
The next resolution, number 4, is in support of effective and reasonable federal and state gun control legislation.
Yeah, you know, I speak to groups often. I don't know, for people who are hunters, I'm not against that, but do you need really a semi-automatic weapon to kill a little rabbit going across the field or a deer? What we have found, and there's been so many issues, the latest one that grabbed national attention, of course, was the killing of so many young people in the school. But when we look at killings across this country, it just seems to me that it's high time, a past time, that we look seriously at trying to deal with some form of gun control. When you look at national figures, the largest percentage of African-American teens killed in 2008 and 2009 were because of handguns and because of the ability to go out and buy guns. That has been a major problem in minority and low-income communities for some years, and more attention is now being paid to it because of these massive killings. But it seems to me that common sense says that we ought to support some form of federal and state gun control legislation.
Resolution number 5 addresses state and local policies, ordinances, and laws which affirmatively further fair housing choice by all persons.
It is against the law to discriminate against people in the sale or rental of properties based on your sex, your religion, your national origin, your disability, and that sort of thing. Yet we have several complaints from citizens dealing with the issue of fair housing. One report I read not long ago from the National Fair Housing Alliance stated that 4 million people suffer from fair housing discrimination every year, but only, they say, 30,000 receive any help. That's less than 1% of the victims. In 2009, 30,213 fair housing complaints were filed nationally. That's something like 8.6% of those housing complaints were based on national origin, and 25% were based on race. So that just gives you an idea nationwide. if you look at Kentucky, I can't say Kentucky is much different to the rest of the nation, but you can go in any town in Kentucky and still find the black part of the town and the white part of the town. Doesn't mean that there is some semblance of integration in some sections of those communities. But we've not done near as much as we need to by way of neighborhood integration. Racial steering still exists, where people can get loans, redlining in certain areas where its insurance rates are higher. All of that sort of thing still goes on all too often in our communities.
Resolution 6 is very interesting. It encourages national immigration reform and opposes state policies which may result in unfair discrimination against immigrants. And the basis is the economic benefit of undocumented immigrants in Kentucky.
Yeah. Well, let me just share with you that our state sees a growing immigrant population, as does the rest of the nation. These people come from all over the world to our state, individuals like from El Salvador, the Philippines, the Sudan, and other areas. These same individuals often face discrimination, landlords refusing to rent to them or employers refusing to pay them at the same rate that they're paying other employees because of their skin color, their accent, or their national origin. Well, we know that's illegal. Many of these people have problems, are reluctant to file complaints with agencies like ours. There are others who, for whatever reason, in some instances, don't speak the language, don't speak it well, and people take advantage of them. These are issues that need to be looked at closely in our state, and we need to make sure that we treat immigrants to our state as we would anybody else. I mean, we all immigrated from somewhere, came here from other places.
The resolution points out that Kentucky hosts over 140,000 immigrants, and that the Immigration Policy Center reported that undocumented immigrants in Kentucky paid $85.1 million in state and local taxes in 2010.
Yeah, figures are amazing. These people are making contributions to the welfare of the state. They're not just here, living off the state. They pay their taxes. They make contributions. They do, in some instances, jobs that no one else wants to do. And I think the more people are aware of these issues, the more they are likely to support legislation that ensures that these people have, you know, their rights are protected. We think that members of the Kentucky General Assembly and our representatives to the U.S. House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate ought to be strongly supportive of all of these issues. You know, Kentucky is one of the poorest states in the nation. I think we are fourth behind three other states in terms of being the lowest income state. I often say that poverty knows no color line. Low-income children in rural Kentucky face the same problems that low-income people in urban Kentucky, black children face in urban areas. And we ought to be concerned with addressing those issues. Our senior senator took the position last 4 years that his number one concern was making the president a one-term president. It seems to me that that was not a priority for Kentuckians. They are more concerned with jobs and eliminating poverty, addressing education issues. We would hope that our elected officials would work with the administration to address these kinds of problems in our state and not be trying to make Kentucky some kind of breeding ground for conservative thinking. We need to be moving in a progressive manner to try to move our state, to address the issues of all of our citizens.
In the final resolution, the Kentucky Commission on Human Rights passed a week or so ago, was in support of felony voter reenfranchisement by amending Section 145 of the Kentucky Constitution.
Yeah, Kentucky is one of, I believe, four states. The other one is Virginia, Iowa, and Florida. We're one of four states that do not allow people, after they've served their time, to automatically have their rights restored without asking for a pardon from the governor. Now, depending on who the governor is, sometimes they put in different procedures and regulations in terms of the number of letters that people have to get and all sorts of things. But what that has resulted in, there are a number of facts and figures that need to be looked at. But the truth is, one out of every four African Americans in Kentucky today are ineligible to vote because of that restriction. If every other, just about every other state in the nation has addressed this, except the four, and a couple of them addressed it and then went back the other way. But it seems to me that our people in Kentucky ought to look very closely, our lawmakers, at what is necessary for people to be able to restore their rights after they serve their time. If they made a mistake in life and did something against the law and they served their time and they came out, part of that rehabilitation ought to be allowing them the right to restore their voting rights. And when we look at the statistics and how it disproportionately affects certain segments of society, we think, again, that it's something that closely needs to be looked at and addressed. People who have served their time and are allowed to vote are not repeat offenders as often as others are. Maybe that's because they now feel a part of the community, they feel invested in the community, they are actively participating as full citizens. I don't really know how to analyze it other than to say that people, once voting, I think, feel themselves an important part of the community and want to move to make the community a better place. And so that may be part of the reason, but nevertheless, that's what the figures bear out.
Mr. Johnson, thank you so much for explaining these resolutions today.
Well, thank you so much, and we would urge your listeners to contact their elected officials and to talk to them about these issues. But when public officials visit your school or your community, that you address them on issues that are important, that continue the dream, if you will, that continue the work of human rights didn't stop with the assassination of Martin King. If he were alive today, these are the type of things he would hope that the citizens would support and that he would be trying to lead a movement to address. Thank you so much for allowing me to participate on your program today.